Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, Paul Dennett here. Just letting you know that Cricket Unfiltered is now on Patreon. If you are a fan of our show and would like to support us with a few dollars each month, go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered or click the link in the show notes on your podcast app.
Menas here. Our Patreon supporters will also get some pretty cool bonus content. Paul will be doing a series of cricket history podcasts.
And Menas will be doing long-form interviews with leading cricket personalities.
All of these shows, plus other bonus features, will be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters.
So if you want some great extra content, or if you just love the show and would like to help support us financially, please go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm your co-host, Andrew Mensel. Joining me is Paul, the Summer Game Dennett. Paul, how are you?
Good, Menas. How are you?
Really good, thank you. And joining us again is someone I have a bone to pick.
Oh,
Jaleesa Apps from Channel 10. How are you?
Really good. Full of nuggets again.
Nice. So my issue with you is, Jaleesa, you've done two radio shows now.
Oh, shit.
And have failed to mention Cricket Unfiltered.
That's
on
a lie.
Of
that's
them.
A lie. On the weekend, I did mention it.
Okay.
I mentioned it. Did you listen to me and Bharat?
Yes, actually, I did. I didn't hear the message for mention of Cricket Unfiltered.
Well, maybe I didn't. Now
no,
I'm
you didn't.
Because I thought I was.
Like, I thought the first show was a rugby league show. There was going to be some effort needed to get Cricket Unfiltered in there. And, you know, you had to force your way into the...
Okay, I thought I mentioned it with Brad, but looking back, maybe I actually didn't, because I did think to myself I was going to, but now I don't know if I did.
Yep, so look, if you're on national radio again, can you please make sure you just slide in some Cricket Unfiltered mentions?
What if I do what if it's rugby league, though?
Just throw it in there. Just say, look, if you like cricket, listen to my podcast.
Okay.
Good, thank you.
Okay.
All right, so listeners, welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. You've been getting Cricket Daily in your podcast feeds for the past couple of weeks. That's on its own podcast feed now, so search Cricket Daily if you want to listen to that. But it's great to be back with Jaleesa and Paul for Cricket Unfiltered. We've got a lot to get through. 2 weeks of headlines, a couple of read and reacts, and then perhaps Jaleesa has a can't let it go to finish things off today.
Yeah, I do.
But let's get into the headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts and the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age are reporting that Steve Smith, David Warner, Pat Cummins, Glenn Maxwell, Marcus Stoinis, Jai Richardson and Kane Richardson all expect to miss the upcoming white ball tour of the West Indies. And there's also supposed to be an unconfirmed leg in Bangladesh. And Tim Payne was speaking to the media earlier this week, and he said that you just have to understand that some of these players have done quarantine, you know, 5, 6, 7 times already, and that's a lot of time in a hotel room by yourself. So I actually don't have a problem with players pulling out of this tournament.
Me neither. I think that I couldn't criticise anyone for having gone through 14 or 15 weeks of hotel quarantine. That would be really awful. I think I'd like to do it once, just 2 weeks of hotel quarantine. I think I'd, for the first few days, I'd love it, the mini bar, there's the room service. But I reckon once you've done it once, doing it the second time and third time, there'd be a real sense of dread, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I've got this slight, I wouldn't mind doing it once, even though I'm quite claustrophobic, just because, like, you know, when you think to yourself, geez, if I went to jail, I'd get really ripped. Like if I had nothing else
like
to do.
Like you'd be doing push-ups, like and sit-ups,
like imagine
chin-ups.
If I did 2 weeks with no Maccas. I think you can get Maccas.
You would be eating tons of nuggets if you're in hotels.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
2 weeks.
But imagine if anyway. Yeah, in conclusion, I don't blame them.
Maybe what you actually need to do is get sent to jail, just not for, you know.
I'm scared
for a minor crime. Just for 2 months.
No, but that's no, I want to be sent for a major crime so people are scared of me. I don't want to be sent for some like parking ticket I didn't pay.
I'm nervous now. I feel anxious in my studio. But in a boost for Paul Dennett and yes. For cricket lovers around Australia, it just goes to show it doesn't matter how old you are, because Dan Christian has been called up to the Aussie squad as a possible replacement for the tour of West Indies, along with Ben McDermott, Cameron Green, Ashton Turner, my man Wes Agar, and Nathan Ellis. Yeah. So I love all those call-ups. And apparently Dan Christian and Ben McDermott are actually had to come back from the UK from their county stint. So they're quarantining here to be in a position to then leave to go to the West Indies.
Yeah, poor old Notts Outlaws. Dan Christian has led them brilliantly in recent years, so they've lost his services. But it's great for Australian cricket. And Trevor Holmes's quotes, he was saying things like, you know, Christian's playing arguably the best cricket of his career. They're almost the sort of quotes that you think he's not there to fill up the numbers. They may actually be considering taking him to these tours and then to the World Cup, and that would be the best thing, as I've been banging on about. When Australia's 4 for 50 after 7 overs in the World Cup final, you want Dan Christian coming out. He's so calm and so good. And I'm really happy as well that Ashton Turner and Cameron Green, I'm happy with all of them, but Ashton Turner and Cameron Green are two favourites of mine as well. So good news.
Nathan Ellis is another former New South Welshman who I think's moved to Tasmania. That's Tasmania, isn't it, Paul? We've done
correct.
A couple of
yep.
games with
yep.
him. He's a very fine bowler. Mm. That's a good call-up. That takes the total squad to 29 before the players pull out. So you would think that'll sort of be peeled back to around 20 by the time they get on the plane to the West Indies. But I want to ask you this question. I'll start with you, Jaleesa.
Mm.
So, you know, Smith, Cummins, they're all pulling out of this tour. What if then most of these players, I know Cummins has said he's not going to go back, but what if the other players then went back and finished the IPL in September after taking this break? Would you think that's a problem?
No, because I would think it was a problem in any ordinary year, but I wouldn't think it's a problem now because you just got to make allowances. They've signed contracts elsewhere and they obviously didn't think that they'd be doing that at this time. But, look, normally it would really piss me off, but it doesn't in this year.
I think I agree with that. And I'd also add the fact that they could point to them playing in the UAE ahead of the World Cup as being the best possible preparation, which I would concur with. So under these circumstances, I'd be okay with it if they did that.
Yeah, I just guess for me there's a slight concern that some of these players with the intensity of an IPL that then heads into a World T20, you would think they're going to be both pretty intense. Then they'll be coming back to the Ashes. That's going to be a tough slog for the multi-format players. But, yeah, it's hard to argue with it because you're right, it's such a strange year. But still,
I don't see a lot
there
of
is
them.
To me, there's a feeling that the IPL had their chance. They friggin' stuffed it up.
But that's not
bad
the players'
luck.
Fault.
Yeah, but the players can say we're not coming back.
Yeah, but then they miss out on a lot of money that that's they true. Might have mortgaged their house. And
yeah, that's true.
Build
it's not
bigger,
my money.
Build another rumpus room, like, you know.
A fifth story on Warner's house or something.
Yep, another pool.
How do you feel about when's it going to be that the IPL is going to add two more teams and add, I think, 2 weeks or 3 weeks to the competition and maybe start it in March soon? So it's only going to get bigger.
Yep, that's true.
What then, what happens when if they don't go? Because there'll be players all over the world that some won't go. Do they do a redraft? Or
yeah, I think they'll do a recalibration of the squads. I think similar to what they did in the Pakistan Super League, where they did another draft for replacement players.
I like watching that.
Good, yeah, go for it.
Thanks. I will.
Menace you has do given it. Permission.
Can't sleep. Watch that. All right, Tim Payne has fronted the press. He was at the National Coaching Centre with some announcements, administrative announcements. But he spoke about Amanis Labuschagne, and I think the Amanis campaign is gathering speed. Payne said about Amanis, he's got leadership in him. There's no doubt about that.
I think you could be right, Menas, and that the Amanis campaign is gathering steam. If Payne were to play, let's say, a year beyond the Ashes, and then Amanis has put more and more gravitas into his persona, maybe he will just slip into it and he'll eclipse Cummins and take over as the next captain, and we'll stick true to form of having the best batsman in the side as the captain. And oh, I could live with that.
Tim Payne also made some comments about Justin Langer. Surprisingly, he said, we are all 100% behind JL and the job he is doing. Would have been strange if he said, oh, you know, we're like 80% behind JL.
Yeah. Wow, in news that will shock no one.
But he did say we had a team review at the end of the Indian series, and from Justin to our last player, everyone will get feedback they can improve on. But, yeah, I think we're sort of seeing, fortunately, this sort of Justin Langer story go away.
Well, I mean, it's going to go away for the moment because they're not really playing any cricket, but it will be all dependent on results. If we lose the Ashes, it won't go away.
I think his contract's up in a year anyway. So if we lose the Ashes, you think he'll finish his contract and then Jason Gillespie will take over.
Do you think they'll advertise on Seek like Melbourne did?
The Renegades job.
Yeah.
Paul and I should have applied for that job.
I know. We all should have as like a trio.
Yeah. Like we could have done it as a team effort.
Yeah. You know,
Paul, the stats analysis. Me, the like, you know, personal motivation stuff.
You know,
what would you have done, Jaleesa?
Definitely probably media and
media managing.
Yeah.
As the coach.
Yep.
Or you would have been the spokesman for the team.
No. It could have been media management and also just general good feelings, good vibes manager.
Well, I think Paul and I had more chance then because we've actually got roles that we've specified.
Hold on a sec, Menace. You're saying that you think that we are in the chance to coach the Melbourne Renegades?
No, I'm just saying we would have had more chance if we put an application in. Then Jaleesa is going, oh, you know, I'll just front the media.
I
would have been in the dressing room pumping him up.
Those are not the vibes I would have allowed.
Obviously, none of us have a chance, but if any one of us had a chance, it's Jaleesa.
That's true.
Thanks, Paul.
That's true, though.
All right, let's head overseas and find out what's happening to the Australians who are scattered across the UK and the United Arab Emirates. Speaking of Amanis Labuschagne, he's scored three consecutive half centuries in the T20 Blast, which is the sort of minor T20 competition in England, a precursor to the 100. 93 not out, 59 and 76, I think, overnight. That puts him as the top run scorer of the competition, and he is just really coming to grips with the T20 game.
I reckon he'll make the Australian squad. I mean, in his last innings, I saw he had a strike rate of 145, hit 1-6. So it was pretty impressive, but not absolute power hitting. I'd be quite happy for him to be in the squad. What do you guys reckon?
I don't think there's any room for him in the team. Whether he's in the squad, maybe, but I just think we've got so many top order players. It's the lower middle order players. It's like a Christian that we really need in the team.
Yeah, I have to agree.
But I certainly think
I don't have any real strong feelings either way, though.
Good for a podcast. Keep that. all right.
Well, I just don't.
Fine. I like your honesty.
It's not swaying me.
Also in the T20 Blast, Darcy Short's over there, Josh Inglis, Travis Head are all playing. Chris Green, the Sydney Thunder off-spinner, took 5 for 32 including 4 wickets and a hat-trick in the final over of the innings for Middlesex in their defeat by Kent. So he's doing very well. Unfortunately, Peter Siddle has had to cut short his stay in England and has come home from for personal reasons. So he was playing for Essex over there, and he's had to come home. He also joins Billy Stanlake and Sean Abbott, who've both had to return from the UK. Billy Stanlake with a stress fracture in his back, which is a real disappointment, and Sean Abbott with a grade 2 hamstring tear. So they are heading back, and they'll have to... Well, they're pretty serious injuries, especially Stanlake's. Now, in the UAE, the Pakistan Super League has kicked off again since our last podcast, Jaleesa. I'll give you that login.
Yeah, oh, why? I'm still waiting.
Oh, sorry.
I'm waiting for your log.
That's a retraction.
No, this is how we're going to end up in jail. We're going to be so hot once we're riffed in jail.
That's it.
For sharing logins.
Stealing a Pakistan Super PSL login.
What are you in for? I murdered someone. What are you in for? I stole a Pakistan.
I shared my TapMad login.
I stole a Pakistan Super League login, but now I do like 50 sit-ups a day. And that's 50 more than I've ever done in my life.
But the blast is going well. I've watched every game. So Tim David, the Hobart Hurricanes all-rounder, who actually made quite an impression last year for the Hurricanes, he's doing very well for Lahore. He hit 64 off 36 in his second innings for them. So good to see him getting some experience. James Faulkner, 8 wickets in 3 games.
Get him in the side, straight into the squad for the World Cup. What do you reckon?
I think 2015 was an awesome year for James Faulkner, and I don't think he'll ever get near those heights again.
Possibly not, but it is good to see him back. And if he keeps on performing like that, you know, you never know.
All right, so that's the Aussies in action. Our cousins across the ditch, our little brothers New Zealand, have beaten England 1-0 in their first series win in England since 1999. It was a 4-day thrashing at Edgbaston, which I have to say, Edgbaston is not the fortress it once was for England. They've lost, what, the last 2 test matches there? This one and then the 1 to Aussies in 2019.
This was a good series to watch. I was a little bit disappointed in the first test that England didn't really go after it in the last day and really, you know, try and claim it. But I thought that was a disappointing way to play. But I thought the series overall was great. But what is going on with – I hate that New Zealand do these 2-game test series. Like, it just – irritates me.
Two, this would have been a good 5
two
test
tests
series.
Is not a series. I hate it so much.
Yeah, but Jaleesa, they're so common now.
They're going to become more and more.
I know New Zealand love them.
Get over it.
I don't think New Zealand love them. I just don't think they get offered anything further. That's the most.
Which is disappointing because this could have been really like a good 5 test series.
Yeah, I think we should remember that this is a bit of a bonus series. New Zealand were there preparing for the World Test Championship, so they kind of squeezed it in. I think they could squeeze in one more. Paul, is the time for me to offer you an opportunity to apologise to New Zealand. You know, you've talked down their performances for a while now, but they're the number one test team. They've beaten England at home. They made 6 changes to their team and still won. Would you like to apologise to our friends across the ditch?
Thank you, Menes, for the opportunity. I really appreciate that. Yes, I am sorry for saying that I thought that England would thrash them in this series and for the fact that they're probably a bit of a soft number one because they've won so many games at home. I still stand by those things, but I am sorry for saying them. And I think that there's every chance they'll beat India in the upcoming World Test Championship final. I think that's going to be a cracker. So I was probably a bit harsh on them. That's true.
I thought your apology was about to be like, I'm sorry, New Zealand, that you're so bad.
That's what he was thinking.
I was really interested in this and I'm really interested to see how they go against India because if we played New Zealand tomorrow – I don't think we'd – I actually think they'd get us.
I think it depends where we play.
Yes, it does.
And the
yes.
problem is the Kiwis have a massive inferiority complex against the Aussies. There's just something in their DNA when they come up against us, they just can't perform. I think they've won 1 test in 40 years, I heard. And that was at Hobart.
I'd love to see
Warner's, like, second test match.
Yeah, I'd love to see them go up for Australia and New Zealand to go – against each other right now, though, because their batting just runs so deep.
But that's something Jim Maxwell was saying. It's this huge opportunity missed by Cricket Australia while there's been a sort of shortage of international cricket not to play a test series against the Kiwis.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We should play them more. And it's not quite one in 40 years. They've done a little bit better than that. But the other thing was, last time they were out here, what did we do to them? We said, you can play the first test on the bounciest wicket in the world in Perth. They had no preparation. They flew 5 hours' worth of time zones across. They'd played a previous game on a flat wicket at Hamilton. It's a day-night test in Perth against the fearsome Australian bowling lineup, and you couldn't really expect them to do all that well under those circumstances. Next time we have them out here, we need to give them proper warm-ups. What was it the time before where they had that ridiculous game where it was 1 for 500 at Blacktown? We've got to give them an actual chance of doing well in Australia.
How do you think we'd go in New Zealand, though, if it was something was played tomorrow?
I think we'd win.
Do you?
Yeah. We tend to win over there. And I think that they'd give it a good run for things. But ultimately, despite what I said before, they did absolutely get thrashed the last time they're out here. Under their conditions, they'd be a lot more competitive, though, it's true. But I still think the Australian bowling would be pretty hard to deal with in New Zealand.
My problem is, though, sometimes, and I think we saw this against India, when our bowling's not working, we don't have much else. Like, their batting runs really deep, whereas we don't really have that still.
No, not at all. I mean, we're still waiting to fill those gaps around Warner, Smith and Labuschagne. I think, though, The talk in Australia about, oh, England are looking so bad ahead of the Ashes, I think it's way too early to start thinking that. I think this series against New Zealand gives little or no indication of how England will go later in the year. The fact that there was a few players resting, obviously the big one is Ben Stokes. He's a match winner. And I just think England can be a lot better than we saw.
Yeah, and I think
don't they love a rest, England?
Their bowling is very good, although it hasn't always performed under Australian conditions. But you just look at the figures of their top order. In test matches, I pulled it up. This is their batting lineup at the moment in their test career. So Rory Burns averages 33, Sibley 31, Crawley 29, Root is the exception, 49, Pope 32, Lawrence 30. The replacements that they've got, they're not that special either. Butler, 35. Bairstow, 34. Stokes, 37. Folkes, 32. I heard people talking about David Milan. He's in the mid-30s. I know it's difficult under English conditions to score a lot of runs, but there's all this talk about, is their technique not right? Is their mindset not right? Maybe they're just not all that good at cricket, the top order for England. They don't have the resources, and I'm a bit flippant about it, but I'll tell you who should be in their top order. They should have Devon Conway, Marnus Labuschagne and Colin Munro in their side. Their recruitment from South Africa has gone astray. The players are going to other countries. Why is, you know, Watling, Wagner, Nita, de Grandhomme from Zimbabwe have gone to other places? So I think that's where they're going to struggle, that their batting figures are just not that impressive.
What about Jimmy Anderson becoming the most capped English test player of all time with a whopping 162 test matches. That is a phenomenal achievement for a fast bowler.
Absolutely. Congratulations to him. And his record in the last 5 or 6 years of his career is the best of his entire career. His average has just kept on going down and down and down. It's now about 26 or thereabouts. It's a phenomenal achievement. Didn't have the best series, only took 3 wickets, but didn't bowl too badly.
We really are seeing the sort of narrative change around older athletes. And I said it last time we were in here. Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, Jimmy Anderson, Dan Christian. You keep going. Roger Federer. I mean, all these, you know, almost 40-year-old athletes are still doing it.
I don't think you put Dan Christian and Tom Brady in the same sentence.
Well, Tom Brady hasn't won a single T20 tournament in his bloody life.
Yeah, when did Tom Brady won the Big Bash?
How many Big Bashes? How many Vitality Blasts has Tom Brady won? How many times has Tom Brady been mic'd up and hit 5 sixes in an innings?
Have a crack, Tom. What we're saying, Tom, is you suck. You're a pretender. You're a cricket pretender.
All right, so that's what's happening in England. As we said, the World Chess Championship final starts this Friday night at Southampton. I am tipping the Indians to run away with this one. I think they are going to win it pretty easily. The Kiwis just can't win finals. They're just physically incapable of winning a final.
At this point in the show, I'd like to give you an opportunity to apologise to our New Zealand listeners for your rudeness.
I really just don't think they're going to win it. I just think everything points to them winning it, which means they probably won't.
No, but to say they don't perform in finals, they virtually won. They tied the last World Cup final. That's performing. They performed on the biggest stage magnificently.
I'm really excited for it, but I just still can't get, again, on board with just – I know it's a grand final of cricket, but I still can't get on board with one test. I think they should do it a grand final series.
Have you been speaking to Ravi Shastri? Because he thinks this should be a best of three
series.
Yes, we
text a lot.
I can imagine.
He also said this is the most important test match in history.
I agree. yeah, but I don't know. I just in cricket it doesn't – I know what they're trying to do. It's a grand final. I get it. But to me it's like, well, it's like an NBA series. It's like an NBA final. Just have a series.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, the problem with one test match, you have one bad session and it's all over.
Yeah.
The culmination of 2 years – a three test match series would be better. The ICC has just come out and said, no, it's not feasible. They can't fit it into the calendar. And I think, come on, guys.
Have a crack.
You can have a crack. There's 104 weeks in a 2 year period. You can fit it in, I'm sure.
You can find it.
You scrap that second limited overs comp they've come up with, like the Champions League that they've invented for the next cycle and do a proper series.
You're talking about the Champions Trophy?
Yeah, they've come up with a new 50-over comp.
They just reinstated one that's been in existence for many years.
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to play that again in the next cycle.
Yeah.
And they could scrap that and play a proper final series.
I think they don't need to scrap that. I'm sure they could just find a way to fit it in. Anyway, as far as the match is concerned, according to the market at the moment, India 39.6% chance, New Zealand a 33.7% chance, and a draw 26.7% chance. So on that front, it's good that the market is very uncertain as to who's going to win. So that makes for an enticing contest.
Prize money is pretty healthy too. If you win the match, just a cool $1.6 million, runner-up $800,000, and if it's a draw, then they split the purse. So that'll be $1.2 million each.
And there is some rain forecast in Southampton, but if the match needs to go onto the sixth day, it can, purely to make up for time that was lost for rain. So hopefully we will get a result. I've gone through both sides, my expected starting 11s, and tried to rank them. I've got this little system that I give each side a score out of 200, and regular listeners to this podcast will say, well, that's useless because you're always getting tips that are incorrect. But for what it's worth, they've come out just about dead even. And so I'm going to sit on the fence and say I think that the side will win, will ultimately be able to look back on it and say the side won that got the better of the conditions or had a little bit more luck, you know, a few umpires' calls going their way. I think that's how evenly they are under English conditions. If it was elsewhere, I'd strongly favour India.
Well, that's it for this week's cricket headlines. We're going to take a quick break. Then we'll be back with Read and React and a review from a listener. And I just want to ask you, if you've got a moment, can you share the podcast on whatever social media you use, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook? If you can share Cricket Unfiltered somewhere, that would be great. Would love to see you do that. All right, we'll take a break, then we'll be back with Read and React. You're listening to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm Menes. I'm with Paul Dennett and Jaleesa Apps, and it's Read and React time. There's been a couple of articles from the week that have, well, I think generated a bit of discussion. Do you want to start this one off, Paul, about Robert Craddock's article on Jason Gillespie's unnoticed debut?
Yeah, Crash starts the article by talking about the fact that when he made his debut and he was the first Indigenous Australian to do so, that fact made absolutely no headlines. And there's a quote here that we've got: of the 458 male cricketers to play test cricket for Australia, only Gillespie has Indigenous heritage. I would love to see more Indigenous players play tests, Gillespie said. We've seen female Indigenous representation in tests with Ash Gardner in recent times and in men's format in the shorter forms of the game with Dan Christian and Darcy Short and Scott Boland, but it would be fantastic to see more. A quote from Mel Jones: when you look at areas you want to improve on, visibility is key. Indigenous kids and parents can see that cricket is a game for them and not just white people.
Quite incredible that when Gillespie made his test debut back in 96 against the West Indies, nothing was made of this. And what does that say about Australian culture at the time?
I had no idea that he was the only Indigenous player. ever.
It's incredible.
Really? With any Indigenous heritage? That's incredible.
And the fact that there was no celebration of it, that it wasn't noticed, I think it just shows, I don't know, that things weren't good back then.
Wow.
I've been preparing this Bill O'Reilly podcast, reading newspapers of the 1920s and 30s, and Eddie Gilbert's name does get mentioned. Now, for those of you who haven't heard, Eddie Gilbert, 1905 to 1978, was arguably the fastest bowler of all time. Alan McGilvray said he's the fastest bowler he ever saw, and he famously, in a Sheffield Shield game against Bradman, bowled an over that Bradman said was just too fast for him, and ultimately Bradman got out caught top-edging a hook shot in a very clumsy sort of manner. You would look at that. Eddie Gilbert played 23 first-class matches with a bowling average of 28.97, which is pretty good. But what he had to deal with, I mean, he'd been taken from his home at age three, taken and fostered out, as was the policy, the disgraceful policy back then. He suffered, just institutionalised racism. And there was huge rumours that he chucked. Now, if he'd been alive today, they would have done the biometric testing. They would have either found that he had a straight arm, which I suspect he probably did, or if he did have a bent arm, they would have done the necessary remedial action. And he may well have played, had a wonderful test career, but there were just so many barriers against him back then. He ultimately died a very sad sort of death, battling mental illness and alcoholism. His life could have been so much better had Australian society been, it's not perfect now, but it's certainly improved a lot in all that time.
I know now Cricket Australia is really trying to promote Indigenous participation in cricket, but obviously in 1996 they weren't, because, I mean, that would have been a perfect time to celebrate his achievement, and it was just ignored.
Yeah.
I wonder why that there is such a low representation in cricket, especially when you look at other sports like rugby league is a very, very high participation rate, and very much celebrates Indigenous participation. So I wonder why cricket has got that barrier still.
Yeah, I mean, cricket's not an easy game to get into. You need equipment and fields and pitches, and I just wonder if this. Well, I'm not wondering. I'm telling you, it says more about society than it does about the game of cricket, and I'm sure it's a little bit of a class thing as well. Going back to England and the way they took the game around the world. But, yeah, there's no excuse. The fact is it just hasn't been good enough.
And the Aboriginal side that toured England in 1868, the first ever Australian side to tour England, if you read a lot of history books written, except in the very recent past, that side's airbrushed out of history. They talk about the 1878 side as the first side ever to tour. And that Aboriginal side performed so well relative to how the Australian sides before and after that performed, where they were getting thrashed by England. The 1868 side was fantastic. So, yeah, the talent is there, and hopefully in the coming years that will change.
There's actually a documentary that was on ABC iView about that, the first side to tour England in the entire team was Indigenous. I can't remember what it is. It's on ABC iView. Maybe have a look in the documentaries.
Let us know. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, yep.
All right. Now, Michael Holding has been speaking to the excellent Andrew Wu from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. And
what is your war on Andrew Wu? Can we get Andrew Wu on the show?
We're getting one of his colleagues in next week. So.
I know, but can we get him?
He just called him excellent.
He's a big unit, Andrew, isn't he? Like,
he's a terrific guy.
Yeah, good luck, Menace.
He's a couple of bad articles.
He'll towel you up, Menace, don't you worry.
Well, looking for a fight.
I know who I'm taking. I'm behind Andrew.
He was able to put these quotes together very well by Michael Holding. So, I've been speaking about this all summer, about I thought that Australia didn't do enough for the Black Lives Matter movement by not the fact that the Australian men's cricket team did not take a knee was an oversight. And West Indies great Michael Holding has delivered a blunt message to the Australian men's cricket team. The only way to support the Black Lives Matter movement is by taking a knee. If you support Black Lives Matter, I don't see how it can be an issue to take the knee, Holding told the Herald and the Age from the UK. So I have to say, I mean, he's 100% right.
He was also very balanced in his opinion as to what happened with Ollie Robinson.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Where do you two sit on Ollie Robinson's suspension?
I tend to agree with Holding on both issues. That I think that Ollie Robinson deserved some censure, and I think Holding basically said, if what he did was isolated, then that's one thing. But if he's had a consistent pattern of doing that more often, then that needs to be, you know, he needs to be educated and that needs to be fixed. So suspend him briefly while you have a look at it all, but then let's get things over and done with and move on. And I tend to think that's about right. So hopefully he will have just this one match suspension and then he'll be brought back into the side.
I think the Ollie Robinson issue is difficult, and I would like to remember which journalist wrote it, but I can't quite remember who did. But there was an article written basically saying that Ollie Robinson is copping the fallout for hundreds of years of racism. So he is now the fall guy for what has been pretty disgraceful behaviour in cricket. And so now he's kind of copying it for years of history. And look, I don't endorse obviously what he said. And
no,
there were some sexist there were sexist tweets
and
racist tweets, and I don't agree with it. But he was an 18-year-old, and these are many, many years ago when he wasn't a cricketer. I would hate to think of – I don't think I ever said anything racist or sexist, but I probably said some stupid shit at
– Tweetdelete.net. Tweetdelete.net.
I probably said some stupid things at 18 years old that that wouldn't probably resonate with me now, just in general.
You want to say a few?
I mean, I can't think of any off my head.
Let's cancel Jaleesa.
And I don't think I was ever inherently racist or sexist. But I think we've all probably said things as a teenager that were probably not our brightest moment.
Absolutely. That's called growing up.
I think that if he said he came out and he had apologized and it was sincere and maybe made some sort of gesture to show that he isn't supportive of that anymore, then I think maybe that would have been enough.
You don't think they should have suspended him for this game, last game?
No, because he didn't act in the capacity of who he is now. It was 10 years ago that he acted. And I don't think we can keep – I don't think the way forward of change is holding – I think it is to recognise – I think the way forward for change is to recognise – things in the past that are shameful, but not to keep punishing people for them, but rather to move forward in a progressive manner.
And get better. I sort of think that they did the right thing to suspend him for this game, just to give everything time to settle down. The poor guy would have had a horrible week with a test taboo being overshadowed by those historic tweets. So give him time to go away and just reflect. It also gives the ECB time to just do their due diligence to make sure there's not more of this out there. I don't think missing one test match is that bad. And I don't think missing one test match is a problem.
I would have preferred if he came out and maybe fronted the media and or there was a little bit more proactiveness rather than punishment. So if there was a little bit more proactive from him saying, you know, these tweets were disgraceful and I'm really – you know, this is where I stand now.
He did front the media and take questions. And he had a long...
Oh, did he? I didn't see that. So
after the first or second
day. I didn't see that him front the media.
And he had a long apology. The only thing that I objected to was that the apology was clearly written by someone else. And he read the apology rather than speaking the apology, which I can understand that you want to get it right. But it was so well worded and it was clearly written by someone with the ECB brand in mind. And it just... it robbed it of a little bit of its sincerity. It wasn't bad, but I would have preferred it if he just sort of put the script away and spoke from the heart.
I can forgive that, though, for somebody who hasn't seen it. I didn't see his apology, obviously, but I can forgive reading off a script in a sensitive issue if you are not used to being around a lot of media, because
true.
I think that you don't want to say anything that is offensive. You don't want to further be offensive to people, because sometimes, you know, when you're trying to get a sensitive topic across, you can almost choose your words too carefully and then sound a bit strange. But so I can forgive him for being a little bit concerned in front of the media.
Also, after Robinson's tweets came out, someone went on a little Twitter search and found... well, James Anderson made a joke about Stuart Broad likening a haircut to making him look like a 15-year-old lesbian. And then Josh Butler and Owen Morgan, there was a couple of sort of comments that they made that seemed to be ribbing the way Indians communicate on Twitter and Instagram. So, yeah, I certainly delete all your old tweets. I do think there is a difference between someone like Jimmy Anderson making a joke about Stuart Broad that might have been in poor taste than someone tweeting out you know, racist stuff. I think you can't really correlate the two.
Anderson's one was 2010 as well, and I suspect it didn't make a splash in 2010. That in 11 years, things have changed for the better. So there's that to it, I think, too.
All right. Well, that was our monthly BLM segment. All right. We've had a review from the listeners. I'm going to read this out because I'm still stinging from that last idiot guru.
Hang on. Can I just say something? I dropped my pages before we started the show, and I asked Manners to put them in the correct order for me because they're not numbered this week. And
Diva.
Look at this. Diva look Jaleesa. At this, Manners. Like, I've got thank you for listening. So, everyone, that'll be the end of the show. Thanks,
yep.
Thanks for listening. You can catch us on Cricket Unfiltered or at Jaleesa Apps. Thanks for listening to Cricket Unfiltered.
Good sign off, Jaleesa. But we've had a review from England. This is from Chiz Bang. 5 stars, great pod. Of all the cricket podcasts out there, this is certainly one of them. But in all seriousness, this is my favourite. Love your work, you three. So thank you, Chizbang from the UK.
Thank you very much.
This is one of them.
All right. We're not going anywhere. We'll take a final break and then we'll be back with Can't Let It Go if Jaleesa's got one this
week. I've got one.
I saw you on your phone doing something.
No, I'm on soccer Twitter today. I did a soccer story today and now I'm part of soccer Twitter. It's a full-time
job.
This
show's becoming a soccer show.
It's a full-time job, guys.
Right. So the Socceroos will be in action. No, we'll take a final break and then we'll be back. Go and find us on Twitter, Oz Cricket Pod, AUS Cricket Pod. Oh, it's Can't Let It Go time. A little nerdler outside off stump that you just have to poke at. And Jaleesa, open up. What's your Can't Let It Go?
Well, this is very on the stumps because this is Shakib Al-Hassan who did you guys see this?
We did, yeah.
Incredible.
Now that we're doing Cricket Daily, nothing misses our attention.
whoever hasn't seen this at home, honestly, just Google it because it's really quite funny. Obviously, one of the best all-rounders we'll ever see. And he's playing in, I think it's the Dakar League. And it was the Dakar League. Yeah.
The DPL, as we call it now that we've been in the Cricket Daily business.
Right. Okay. The DPL. Sorry, guys.
Keep up. Okay. Clearly doesn't listen to Cricket Daily.
Oh, I've just got it on my watch list. I've just so many podcasts. Anyway, so basically, he didn't get an LBW and had a bit of a spat about that. Kicked the wickets and stumps and just
he kicked them like violently.
He kicked them very violently.
And the umpire was very close to them.
It was quite dangerous. But the best part then comes. So you watch that and you're like, oh, okay, have a bit of a spat. Then the rain comes, which no one's got control over the rain. And they call, they're like, all right, cover's on, blah, blah, blah. And he just picks up the stumps and he just loses it. It is a child having a tantrum. It is fantastic to watch.
It's like wrestling meets cricket.
He just, and actually it was very dangerous. I mean, the stumps, like he's throwing them, you know.
But just coming back from suspension, he's going to be suspended again.
The ironic thing was that they were ahead on Duckworth Lewis. The umpires calling that covers on won them the game.
Love it. He just
clearly
had
he's just another one of those cricketers that doesn't know the rules.
He just had it. Well, who does know Duckworth Lewis Stern?
That's all I think
Paul
about.
Dennett.
That's all I dream about. Actually, one other thing. When I first saw that, I thought, I can't believe he only got suspended for 3 matches. That's really bad. But turns out that the DPL is in a bit of trouble, that there's all this accusation of biased umpiring and teams underperforming. And basically, the head of Bangladesh cricket's launching a full-on investigation to it. So it may be that this shocking behaviour is the tip of a pretty unpleasant iceberg.
Or do you think it's the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, apparently for Shakib Al-Hassan, it's not the first time he's there's a bit of a litany of poor behaviour over the years that's kind of been tolerated. But, yeah, it did look plumb, the LBW, to be fair to him.
It reminded me of, oh, my God, I'm going to tell this story and my dad's going to kill me, but I don't care.
Okay, go on.
Okay. It reminded me of my dad. I don't know if I should tell this, but my dad and his friend in cricket in Borua. Like, so obviously cricket in Borua, like the town's got 1,200 people. Yeah, it's not that serious.
They're all fighting all the time.
It's not that serious. But his friend and him, so my dad still plays. He's in his 50s and his friend would be well in his 40s. and they lost and Dad's the captain and they just had the biggest spat at each other. This is 10 years ago. And it was just so funny because it was like, we're all cricket. And Dad goes, rightio, well, you blokes, you've got a new captain next week. There you go. You've got a new captain. And just the spat was so funny. And I was sitting on the side with my friend who was the other guy's son, and we were just like, this is so embarrassing, like calm down. But it just reminded me of that, just this nothing meaningless kind of game just out of control.
That's awesome.
Well, my can't let it go is a lot more laid back than Shakib Al Hassan. So 2 days ago on the 13th of June, or whenever you're listening to this, on the 13th of June, it was the 22nd anniversary of one of the best 50-over games I've ever seen. On the 13th of June 1999 at Headingley, Australia won a famous game against South Africa. They needed to win to make the semi-finals of the 50-over World Cup. Steve Waugh smashed 120 not out off 110 balls. But the reason I put this here is because our segment's called Can't Let It Go. Well, ironic, because Herschel Gibbs couldn't hold on to the ball. It's, that match is famous for Herschel Gibbs, you know, trying to catch Steve Waugh and then throwing it up too soon to celebrate. And it slipped out and South Africa went on to lose the game. Steve Waugh famously said to Gibbs, you've just dropped the World Cup. On that, the anniversary of that game, Herschel Gibbs tweeted out that it was still his favourite World Cup, despite the heartbreaking loss. Uh-huh. But also I noticed Gibbs is making a comeback. You thought that the DPL was obscure. The Kashmir T20 League is kicking off soon. Gibbs is playing at 47.
Well, Brad Hogg played till about then.
Exactly.
Wow, 47, that's awesome.
Yeah, but a great game at Headingley in 1999, second best 50-over game I've ever been to.
You shouldn't get too cocky when you celebrate.
What do you mean?
Like, well, if he was celebrating and he dropped it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Like, you just, you know.
Exactly. It was a bit like the Marnus Labuschagne catch in the Shield final where he went to celebrate and it kind of slipped away.
It was a bit like, was it
the final or the game before?
Game before.
Sorry, yeah. This is another sport, Menace, but on the weekend in the UFC, there was a guy that broke the record for a knockout in seven.
So UFC is not a sport.
In 7 seconds. It is a sport.
It's not a sport.
In 7 seconds, and then he jumped up and did his ACL in celebration.
Oh, serves him right. Not a sport. All right, Paul, you can't let it go.
Well, just briefly, the India-New Zealand game coming up, I think a lot of Australians will be supporting New Zealand. I think there are three main reasons for that. One, we've got a great rivalry with India, so we want to sort of see them get beaten. Two, the New Zealand cricket team is so easy to like. But three, I think Australians and New Zealanders should support each other more as a matter of principle. Obviously, if the Wallabies are playing the All Blacks, we can't. But as long as there's no competing interest, I urge all Australians to support New Zealand, and I urge all New Zealanders to support Australia. We should have an even closer brotherhood or fraternity than we do with our cousins across the ditch.
Well, I would like a closer fraternity with our Indian brothers from the subcontinent. So I'm going to be supporting India.
Oh, I'm going for New Zealand.
Well, there you go.
I didn't know. I think everyone supports New Zealand. You would be different. You would.
I hope they lose.
Why don't you support New Zealand?
Why would I support them?
Because it's our friends. They're our friends. They're near us.
They're so boring.
They're in our bubble. We're basically the same country now.
I mean, nice guys.
They're the only place we can travel to.
I just like the snap and crackle of the Indian side there. They're fiery. They're great cricketers. New Zealand are a good team, but I'm going for India.
Okay.
All right. Well.
Fine.
That's it for this episode of Cricket Unfiltered. Paul, you'd like to introduce something?
Just a quick excerpt from my Bill O'Reilly podcast. If you're a subscriber to us on Patreon, you can listen to this in full, but just play a couple of minutes for you for it now. O'Reilly was puzzled by Bradman's appearance. He described him as a diminutive figure and said, "What struck me most about him was the difficulty he seemed to be having in taking normal steps as he approached. His pads seemed to reach right up to his navel." But O'Reilly then added, "Still, he shaped up as though he knew what the game was all about, and the expression on his face publicised the fact that he felt quite at home and was ready to cope with anything I had in store for him." Bradman began brilliantly, much to O'Reilly's consternation. "My training as a prospective primary school teacher was supposed to have prepared me for dealing with the occasional hard case. but nothing could have prepared me for the confrontation with this particular youth. But with Bradman's score in the 20s, O'Reilly got his measure. He got a ball to lift and bite, and Bradman edged it to first slip to the captain, Selby Jeffrey. Jeffrey dropped the catch. Shortly after, O'Reilly recounts that he speared in his quicker ball, and Bradman edged it again straight to Jeffrey at first slip. And again the catch went down. "Sorry, Bill," said Jeffrey. O'Reilly wrote, "Who in the name of all that is holy could ever possibly hope to get away unscathed when Don Bradman had been given two lives?" Bradman was impressed. He later wrote, "Bill O'Reilly was by far the best bowler I had met up till then, and that O'Reilly's ability to turn a leg break with speed amazed me and kindled an admiration for his skill." Nevertheless, Bradman proceeded to obliterate the Winjelow attack. When stumps were drawn, the Bowral scorecard read, "Alf Stevens bowled O'Reilly 2, Sid Cubitt bowled O'Reilly 45, A.O. Pryor not out 46, Bradman not out 234. And the total was 2 for 335. Bradman had batted just under 3 hours, and by the end it was a massacre, with 48 of Bradman's final 50 runs coming in boundaries, 6 fours and 4 sixes. Bill O'Reilly was mortified. He loved cricket and had thought he had plenty of ability. Bradman's innings had changed all that. "I saw no hope ahead for me," he wrote. "All was gloom. I began to count my blessings in that I had other sports to choose from. Having been belted unmercifully by a schoolboy was a pill too bitter for me to swallow. My pride had been badly injured." The game continued the next Saturday, this time in Winjelow, and O'Reilly was resigned to further punishment. He bowled the first ball of the day to Bradman. The ball fizzed towards leg stump, gripped and turned, and cannoned into off stump. Bradman bowled O'Reilly 234. In Bill's words, "Suddenly I thought the grass around our Winjelow ground began to look greener than ever it had done before. The birds began to sing. The sun shone becomingly. One ball changed my whole sporting outlook. Gone were the dismaying plans to give the game away forever." This was the beginning of a remarkable relationship between O'Reilly and Bradman, but it never became a friendship. O'Reilly later wrote, "On the cricket field, Bradman and I had the greatest respect for each other. I certainly did for him, and I know he did for me. But I might as well come straight out with it and let you know that off the field we had not much in common." As a postscript to this first encounter between the two, you'll recall that in the previous season's final against Mossvale, O'Reilly had been the star with 14 wickets. This season, Bowral played Mossvale in the final, and as if just to outdo Bill, Bradman won the game for Bowral with a score of exactly 300. The stunning performances by O'Reilly and Bradman could be dismissed as irrelevant, coming as they did in bush cricket. But both young men were about to make their mark on the Sydney cricket scene.
Well, that's it for Cricket Unfiltered. I hope you enjoyed that segment from Paul's Bill O'Reilly podcast. I've got an interview with Megan Shute coming and then Crash Craddock. So head to our Patreon. Jaleesa, have a great week. Next week, we're hopefully going to be joined by Malcolm Conn in studio.
Oh, I'm excited for this one.
It's going to get really fiery then.
Mal's got just, I'm sure, an absolute treasure chest of stories that I'm excited to dip into. Also, I really want people to tweet us and tell us about the cricket tantrums that have happened at their clubs.
Oh, that's a good idea. Tweet your cricket tantrums.
I just love cricket tantrums.
All right.
Make my dad feel better.
Yeah, make Jaleesa's dad feel better. Well, Paul, have a good week.
You too. See you guys.
Bye-bye. Bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk. Maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.